You are listening to BensTorah.com.
The historical rule given by the Supreme Court of the United States, it was 2/3 majority, wasn't even close. And the basic purpose of this specific court judgment was to override the famous Roe versus Wade case, which gave, to say very simply, unlimited ability to have abortions for any reason you so desire, and literally took away any restrictions that might have existed in American law up until that point in time. I do want to mention to you that the problem of people having abortions is a worldwide problem. It is a massive, massive phenomenon that takes place. According to statistics, about 56 million abortions are performed worldwide every year. In America, we're talking about millions upon millions. And the fact of the matter is that we have to understand what are the repercussions of abortions, not just only according to legal law, but according to God's law that he gave to mankind from the beginning of creation of the world. Unfortunately, in the whole debate that's taking place in the court system today, God and what God has to say and what the Bible has to say is totally not quoted whatsoever. It is very, very crazy and simply abnormal that in the country of America that brags that it was created with the ideology of the Judeo-Christian beliefs, that when it comes to this topic in our generation, what the church and the Jewish world holds and what the Bible holds, and more importantly, what God holds, has no significance in the debate that's taking place whatsoever. But I will take care of that in the course of my presentation. But I first want to give you some facts over here, and then we'll get into the actual nitty-gritty. I do want to mention to you, when it comes to this specific topic, that historically there were anti-abortion rules and regulations in the United States of America in its early years of its creation. Since many of these people were very religious, they believed in the Bible, they believed in God. Ultimately, we put in our money in God we trust, and I hope we still do. The fact of the matter is that ultimately speaking, there were anti-abortion laws in existence. What actually caused an entire tumult and made people rethink this, that whether abortion should be permissible under certain conditions, was events that took place in the 1960s, 1962. We have people over here who were pregnant, were given tranquilizing pills called thalidomide, and this drug unfortunately caused deformed babies in the thousands, born without legs, born without arms, and unfortunately speaking, a lot of women who were pregnant were given this drug, and they had terrible consequences when it comes to defective children that were born. If that wasn't enough, in the 1964, we had the outbreak of German measles epidemic in the United States that caused thousands and thousands of physically deformed, mentally babies to be created, which also caused a tumult. Perhaps we should be able, quite obviously, to abort a baby to prevent bringing such a baby into this world. So these two events really roused the public's concern of maybe not just saying abortion is always prohibited, but maybe we should make a rule and regulation that abortion should be permissible under certain circumstances. For this reason, ultimately speaking, a lot of states started to reassess their abortion laws. And what finally happened over here was, when you go basically to the 1960s, 1970s, you find many states basically saying the following, that they wanted, the 15 states wrote this in their abortion laws, that pregnancy should be basically allowed to be aborted if it's a result of rape, the result of incest, where the baby might be born malformed physically or mentally, where the mother's life or health is at stake, her life is threatened. And therefore, what they want to do is to put certain clauses in to allow abortion under certain circumstances, which is understandable. We can understand these. I'll compare these kulos to the halachic requirements of our leniencies when it comes to abortion. When I get into that part of the topic this morning. But I do want to mention to you that a lot of the laws of the prohibition of abortion in America alone were basically modified because of these various crises that took place in the 1960s. However, the problem that we are dealing with is an ultimate United States Supreme Court decision that took place in the year 1973. It's called the decision of Roe versus Wade. And what the statute said, all abortion statutes in the country are unconstitutional, and effectively legalized abortion on demand was given its ultimate existence. Once again, any statutes against abortion in the country are unconstitutional, and therefore legalized abortion on demand is allowed. And that means you don't have to be in any of the categories mentioned before. There's no danger to mother's health. There's no problem of a child being born malformed. There's no problem of rape or incest. If you want an abortion, you just go and you get your abortion. No limitation whatsoever. And that's basically has been the law for the last 50 years. And don't think that because of the openness of this specific permissibility, that leniencies upon leniencies upon leniencies have then developed and developed and developed. Even though initially when the Supreme Court passed this, they put some limitations at what time in the actual creation of the baby, the first, the second, the third trimester, are we going to allow these abortions to take place, et cetera, et cetera. When can the government get involved to take care of the baby's life besides the mother's life? When does the actual court have to stand on the side, not do anything? Slowly but surely, more and more and more leniencies and leniencies and leniencies kicked in to the point that ultimately, not very, very short while ago, in the world of abortion, not only were they aborting children in the third trimester, which initially was not allowed, even according to this Supreme Court statement that was made in 1973, but we now had partial birth abortions. A child was partially born. They could kill the child even though part of the body already came out, and this was legally allowed under the way they interpreted this specific statement of the Roe versus Wade when it comes to its permissibility. That's how far this basically developed. During the presidential debate, you might not remember, but this was a debatable question that was posed to Hillary Clinton with Trump when they were debating this specific topic. And an answer by her was never given to this. But that's how far it went, and that's how far it's still going, at least up until this point in time. I do want to mention to you that when it comes to the Roe versus Wade, this specific woman who was basically used by some lawyers in Texas to try to take away the restrictions of the Texan law to abortion, this woman did not have any of the problems mentioned before. She was not going to have any endangerment to her life. This was going to be the third child that was born to her, healthy, without any problem. There was no problem with the health of the child, with her health. There was no endangerment over here. She just didn't have an interest to have a third child. And it wasn't because of financial problems. It wasn't because of psychological, emotional problems. She wasn't interested. And therefore, two lawyers who had an agenda to basically legalize abortion across the board basically took her as one of the people that are a perfect candidate to be utilized in this specific case. And their mazel was, as they met a court that had a tremendous liberal format when it comes to dealing with cases like this. God, the Bible, religion, precedent of the history of America meant nothing to this Supreme Court. And 7-2, the justices voted to make this rule and regulation, and that is any statutes against abortion in the country are unconstitutional, and therefore abortion on demand is permissible with certain restrictions at what part of the trimester you're allowed to do it. The fact of the matter is that many years later on, this specific woman, whose name was not Roe, her name was McCorvey, Roe was the pseudonym given to her, And she later on realized that she had made a mistake. She shouldn't have participated. She shouldn't have allowed herself to be used. In fact, she even joined for a while anti-abortion groups were trying to fight the leniency of abortion. There's a certain irony when it comes to this. The fact of the matter is that this was a tremendous, tremendous hoax that was put upon America. When it came to why they wanted to justify abortions, they brought it under one of the amendments of the Constitution, the concept of privacy that people have, Amendment number 14. And therefore, because a person has a right to privacy, they can do what they want. And they included having a personal desire to have an abortion. Because I don't want the baby. I don't need the baby. And it was a mistake. That is personal privacy privileges. And if that's what the reason is, you don't want to have a child and to abort it, they will legally allow you to do such. Believe me, when I read all the literature on this specific topic about the fights amongst the various justices in the court on the topic, and then with other law groups outside the court arguing this way and that way, this has been a major, major decision of the Supreme Court that many said was going to be looked upon as a disaster for generations to come. And the fact is it has been a disaster because of the millions and millions of abortions taking place in America without any rhyme and reason whatsoever. It's a question of convenience. There's no medical need whatsoever, no real reason to really do it, just convenience. You have then the legal abortion clinics being brought into existence, legal abortion clinics. Then you have, quite obviously, organizations that have been created whose entire panos is based upon supposedly giving women counsel when it comes to reproductive sciences and how to basically prevent getting pregnant with conception. The parenthood organization that receives a lot of money from the government, which are known not only to basically counsel women to have abortions, but besides that, they're basically known to then take the babies that are aborted and sell their body parts to make money on the side. There's a big scandal about this about 2 years ago. Somehow the news, who are very liberal, squashed this, but this is a reality. They have even tapes of the people giggling and laughing in this abortion clinics, from the parenthood-sponsored abortion clinics, because they are making money on this, and it's a tremendous business. So we're dealing with this type of society, and they made this into a women's rights phenomenon. Women have rights, and they have control over their bodies. Whatever you can do to try to push this agenda forward was done, and the liberalization of abortion reached levels that was similarly was an abortion, was, for as far as we're concerned, a total abomination when it comes to religious law, and when it comes to even secular law. Totally, totally uncontrolled and totally crazy. But I want to point out something to you. Before I get to Jewish law and explain to you the problem with all that's going on when it comes to this specific topic, since America looks upon itself as a religious country based upon the Catholic and Christian tradition, I want to read to you just a couple of minutes what the Catholic view is on abortion before I tell you what the Jewish view is. And I want you to listen very carefully how the church to this very day basically looks upon abortion. The Catholic Church's attitude towards therapeutic abortion is they feel it's a direct attack on the fetus. They call it 100% real murder, even if carried out with the best intentions. They claim either a man or a state has the authority to destroy the life of an innocent person. And both criminal and therapeutic abortions involve direct and deliberate destruction of an innocent life. The emphasis is innocent. The unborn child from conception onward is considered a human being with all the rights of any other human person. Therefore, even if a direct abortion would preserve the mother's life or health, it is not morally permissible. The church is known to say we rather see, ultimately speaking, two deaths, the death of the mother and the child, then the murder of the child to save the mother. In the October 29th, 1951, Pope Pius the 12th made an address, and he said, every human being, even infants in the mother's womb, has the right to life immediately from God. not from the parents or from the human society authority. Therefore, no man, no human authority, no science, no medical, eugenic, social, economic, or moral indication can show or give a valid jurisdictional title for direct deliberate disposition concerning an innocent life. Therefore, to save the life of the mother is the most noble end, but the direct killing of the child to accomplish this is basically not a legal perspective. So therefore, they didn't allow this even to save the mother's life. Furthermore, the church made its opposition, said as far as they're concerned, the penalty for performing abortion is considered, as far as they're concerned, a terrible crime in which the person should be excommunicated, etc. Even those assisting in the abortion should be basically also excommunicated. From the standpoint of the Catholic Church, there seems to be neither a psychiatric medical indication for terminating a pregnancy. In the Protestant world, there you'll have opinions similar to the Roman Catholic Church, but then in the liberal parts of the Protestant world, tremendous leniencies, leaving it to the women and doctor to make the decisions. So what I'm pointing out to you is that a country that was built on a Judean Christian phenomenon, you can understand why there were basically anti-abortion laws in America in the beginning of its history until current times itself. So what I want to deal with today is what is the real halachic opinion about abortion. And in it, I'm going to deal not only with the Jewish people, I'm going to deal with the B'nai Noach as well. B'nai Noach is the term used by Chazal for the entire non-Jewish world who are not Jews. Either you're a Jew or you're Ben Noach, but B'nai Noach, as well as Jews, have mitzvahs that were given to them, laws that were given to them by God, of how they're supposed to conduct themselves in this world according to God's rules and regulations, who, after all, created the world, who basically controls what happens in the world, who is the theological entity that defines for human beings what they have to do to deserve to live in this world, what religious obligations they have. It's in the biblical text of the Bible, of the Torah Shebiksav, that was open to be read by not only the Jewish world, but the non-Jewish world as well. And quite obviously, the Christian world, which was so strict, were going according to biblical law when it comes to the concept of them being very, very, very machmir when it comes to abortions. But I want to go into the nitty-gritty, and that is the following. You know, one of the major debates I once had with a Christian theologian who could obviously was against abortion as I was under normal circumstances, I once asked that specific clergyman, can you tell me in the Bible where God prohibited it? Now, the only problem is in the Christian church, they don't have a mesaris and have to interpret the Torah of Torah Shalpeh like we have. And therefore, they quote various passages in biblical texts and Tehillim and other places that have nothing to do with the topic whatsoever. So I told this theologian, I'm going to share with you what our Jewish tradition is. From the Bible, you believe that God gave us at Mount Sinai. We're going to give you the oral laws source material, which many of you sometimes analyze from our sources. Where exactly to pinpoint that the prohibition of abortion was made by God as part of biblical law applying to Jew and non-Jew alike. And I refer to them in Parshas Noach. You find very, very explicitly that when Noach and his children got out of the Teva after the flood ended, the first dissertation halacha that God gave to mankind, to Noah and his children, to mankind in general, was to basically emphasize the definite prohibition by God of committing the sin of murder. Murder is one of the Shemis Mani Noach, one of the seven laws of Noah. It's surely part of the mitzvahs of the Torah, of the Aser Tzedibros, Hazlo Sirtzach, Isa Shvichas Dam. And therefore, in the biblical text in Parshas Noach, for those who want to look it up, if you want to look in the 10th chapter of Sefer Bereishis, and you want to look specifically in Pasuk Hey and Vav, and ultimately Zayim, it's in these places that you have the actual prohibition of murder and specifically abortion spelled out in the following fashion. God says, "Es dimcha nafshasechem edrosh, I'm going to hold everybody responsible, humans and animals, for causing destruction of life. Miyad Adam, Miyad Ish, Achiv, Edrashus Nefesh Adam. I'm going to behold everybody responsible for killing. And the fact that mentions Ish and it mentions Achiv, Rav Mecklenburg, one of our Gedolei HaBefarshim of the Torah, Rav Mecklenburg says, if murder, if homicide is prohibited, why do you have to measure fratricide? So he comes up with the conclusion, which is accepted in halacha, that the reason you want to kill a person has no halachic significance whatsoever when it comes to whether murder is permissible or not permissible. He points out, if people who are strangers kill you, they do that for all different types of negative reasons. Hatred, they want to rob you, they want to kill you, they want to destroy you. So therefore, they're doing it for basically malicious reasons. If a brother kills a brother, it's usually done for merciful reasons. You see your brother in pain and anguish, going into a hospital, they're plugged up into every possible machine. So there's a merciful desire for you to want to basically ease their pain by putting him to death earlier. So it says over here, whether they're killing you for the purpose of malicious intent or they're killing you for merciful reasons, merciful release. The famous term that's used is euthanasia, killing a person for the fact that you want to basically relieve their pain and anguish, kill them in a loving fashion, in a merciful fashion. It doesn't make a difference. In God's eyes, every type of murder is prohibited under normal circumstances. The only time God gave a permission for you to commit murder, when it comes to self-defense of yourself as a human being, when it comes to self-defense of a country to have to fight a war to defend itself, certain people have violated capital crimes according to biblical law. They have Mrs. Bezdin applying to them. But under normal circumstances, to kill somebody, even because of mercy you have upon them, is halakhically prohibited as the biblical prohibition. But now we come to the pasuk of abortion. When it comes to abortion, pasuk Vav says, Shefech dam adam adam yeshafech, a person who kills a person who's in a person, their blood will be spilt, which means they're going to be chay misa having done such. Ki betzalem elokim asas adam. Man has been created in the image of God, and God says what he wants to do in this world is not destroy human beings. I want you to populate the world with human beings and bring more human beings on the face of this earth. This pasuk of Shefech dam adam b'adam, that of killing a person in a person, is interpreted in our Torah, Shul, Pen, Gemara, and Sanhedrin. What's a human being and a human being? Ze'uba b'me'im was referring to a baby that's in the uterus of a mother that's growing, that's undergoing gestation for 9 months. If you kill that baby, the Torah says you've committed an act of murder. You destroyed a tzelem elokim, a child that already has a divine image contained in it. The concept of ultimately ensoulment, of being given a soul by God, the Gemara already discusses it, the Midrashim discusses it, Zohar discusses it, is given in the child to a child that by day 41, from the time of conception, the child already has an ensoulment of God's divine image, the Tzelem Elokim, the Nefesh Hashem, that Hashem blows into the nostrils, or is contained in that child, and on many levels he's looked upon as a halachic human being in certain areas, when it comes to one area over here, and that is the area of its destruction. If you kill that human being inside the human being, you're basically committing a capital crime of murder, and in B'nai Noach law, even for the non-Jewish world, if they practice abortion, the Gemara says, and we pass in this way, they're chayim mises beznef for having done such. That is the halacha that is mentioned very explicitly in the Torah, interpreted not only referring to the Jew, interpreted referring to the non-Jew. That's very explicit. The Roman Catholic scholar was very appreciative. I gave him now a source, and he now understands where in the Bible this is contained, etc., etc. But now I want to mention one important fact. The ones I point out that abortion is a biblical prohibition by God applying to Jew and non-Jew alike, quite obviously courts therefore don't have a right to redefine God's rules and regulations and eliminate them from the face of this earth because they feel they have a legal right to adjudicate law. So what basically any court, including the Supreme Court, has done is taken the issue out of the divine law of God. They've basically decided it's a secular issue which they can basically rule upon. Religion has nothing to play over here. And therefore, if that's the case, they've decided to write abortion out of the book. We're legalizing it, whatever reason you want to legalize it, except in excess. So that's the first major problem we have. The second problem, and this is a problem, I'll be honest with you, that the Christians have and the Jews do not have. The question is the prohibition of abortion 100% prohibited in all cases? So once again, we have to say, Ashreinu Matel Chalkeinu, how lucky we are as Jews, that God gave us an oral law to define the parameters of the written law. And there happens to be a Mishnah, in Masechtas Avodos, which is in Seder Taros, which defines for us when in the world of halacha, a abortion would be permitted according to divine law. What type of abortion is in fact permitted according to divine sanction? God said, as bad as abortion is, I'm giving you an exception to the rule. So the Mishnah says very explicitly, and this is brought down later on by the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch and all the great Poskim, and what I'm telling you now applies not only to a Jew, it applies even to a non-Jew. If the mother's life is at stake, the mother's life is in jeopardy, if this pregnancy goes through, the Mishnah says, God says, I'm giving you a permissibility to terminate the pregnancy of the child to save the mother's life as long as the baby is inside the uterus. And this dispensation goes, even believe it or not, including up into the third trimester. As long as the baby has not crowned and come out of the mother's body, as long as the baby's inside, and the mother's life is literally in a question of pekuach nefesh, you're allowed to terminate the birth to save the mother's life. I didn't make the decision. That person didn't make the decision. The Rabbeinu Shalom, who created the world and gave us rules and regulations of theological requirements of how we're supposed to observe God's laws, told the Jew and non-Jewish world a therapeutic abortion is permissible if the mother's life is at stake. And there's no question or debate in any of the sources basically saying we don't hold that way. So the fact of the matter is therapeutic abortions are permissible according to Jewish law. Now I do want to mention to you, if that's the case, you automatically see that according to the current practice of Jewish law in contrast to the Roman Catholic world, we have a divine leniency, which we apply, and when a mother's life is at stake, or suffered b'kuach nefesh, we will therefore pass them to terminate the pregnancy, rather than causing the mother to die. The Roman Catholic world, who does not have our Torah Shel Baal Peh, was not aware of the specific leniency, and even when you tell them there is such a leniency, and you should know that the Poskim say, the leniency of therapeutic abortion that applies to Jews applies to the non-Jewish world as well, and therefore they theoretically could have an abortion of the mother's life at stake. This categorically rejects the prohibited view of the Roman Catholic world, who says under no conditions can you perform an abortion even if the mother's life is at stake. I told you they believe, well, basically two deaths are better than one murder. We do not agree, because God told us not to agree. We know that pekuach nefesh and saving human life is of divine, infinite value. Everybody's creating the image of God. And therefore, if that's the case, Jew and non-Jew have to save the mother if the baby is threatening her life in the course of the pregnancy from beginning to end before the baby emanates into this world. Once the baby emanates into this world, the Mishnah, the Shulchan Aruch, and the Rabban Paskin, you can no longer at that point in time do anything whatsoever to kill the baby to save the mother's life. The baby's an independent being once it crowns and comes a little bit out of the mother's body. At that juncture, God's going to make a decision what's going to happen, but we can involve ourselves to kill the baby then to save the mother's life. That's a Mishnah, it's a halacha, that's the way it's paskin. So obviously when it comes to this, Judaism is much more makel when it comes, based upon God's divine instruction, when it comes to ease of abortion, that therapeutic medical abortions are halachically permissible. Later, Peskin bring down, when it comes to Jewish law, that if the baby is going to be born with all different types of deficiencies to the point that the baby will not have functionability in this world, like an encephalic child, they're going to be born with a deficient brain or other major body dysfunctionality, which will make the baby's life basically not able to survive with viability in this world for a long period of time. We have source materials in our halakha literature to allow you to perform an abortion for such a child as well, according to halakha. That's called an avela michaim, according to the way it's brought down, the Tshuva Mi'ava, one of the great Gedolei HaPoskim. So we have literature on this specific concept as well. And therefore, we have this leniency, which once again, we have in the world of halakha, but the non-Jewish world, the Catholic world, does not know of this or care about it, and therefore they prohibit it under all circumstances. But I want to show you where, when it comes to the Roman Catholic world, they went a little too far, and where we in Judaism drew a line, which you have to be aware of, because it has major ramifications in the world of medical treatment of patients with new modern technologies available. One of the greatest new technological advances we have in medicine today is called embryonic stem cell research and therapies. And what this means very simply is when couples undergo in vitro fertilization because they can't get pregnant any other way, and usually the mother is superovulated, so she produces multiple ova at the time of her ovulation, and this is brought to a laboratory with the husband's sperm. Usually all the various ova that are brought are put together with the sperm, and therefore all of them undergo conception. So she can have, from this ova, this superovulation, 15 prezygotes created in the laboratory, her ova, husband's sperm, etc., etc. They then allow these prezygotes to undergo a couple of days of mitosis, and by day number 5, they turn into what's called a blastocyst. This happens naturally in the body when conception takes place in the fallopian tubes. 5 days later on, as that prezygote now floats into the uterus, it connects to the uterine wall. Of course, this blastocyst has an outer layer that basically connects the baby that's going to be formulated over here. And this, from this blastocyst, connects it with connective tissue to the mother's body. The inner cell mass of this blastocyst was created by God to create the 200 tissue types that literally create the human being from the top of his head to the bottom of his feet and all the organs contained in the body itself. So this blastocyst is a crucial creation that is the beginning of the creation of human life. When it's created in the body, it itself connects to the uterine wall. The umbilical cord will be developed from the outer core of this blastocyst cell, and the inner cell mass will start developing over 9 months into the physical body of a human being. In the laboratory, when the blastocyst is created, nothing has happened except that you have a blastocyst. If you want a woman to be impregnated with in vitro fertilization, they have to insert some of these blastocysts into her uterus and hope that they connect to the uterine wall, so then at that time they'll also create a human being after 9 months later on. So the fact is, this concept of creating babies with this type of technology, even this, according to certain church rules and regulations, might be prohibited because they say there's a concept of natural law, which means you have to do everything naturally. We shouldn't be using these artificial mechanisms of fertility. But in halacha, we do not accept this prohibition of natural law. It doesn't exist. On the contrary, we hold as a concept of kivshua, of conquering the world, which means to conquer the world technologically, medically, and otherwise for the benefit of mankind. God gave us a right to circumvent natural law if we want to basically create children or do other things of major technical value for mankind at large. So we don't have the impediments of the church when it comes to that. But let me explain to you where the abortion problem comes into existence. Since we've created, let's say, 15 different prezygotes in the laboratory, they're only going to insert 2. What do you do with the rest of them? So since these women might want to get pregnant in the future, they put it into a deep freeze type of situation. They freeze them. It puts them into suspended animation. They pay rent in a hospital to basically keep these things in existence. And when they want to have more children in the future, they take them out of this freezer, and they basically bring down to room temperature. You implant them into the mother's body in the uterus, and they're able to connect to the uterine wall, and more healthy babies are born. This is a definite technique which unquestionably has worked. Millions of babies have been created because of this in vitro fertilization. But what happens if there's a lot of extra pre-zygots that the couple, especially non-Jewish people, do not want to have? They don't want to have 15 children. So what do you do with the extra pre-zygots? So the medical world said to them, instead of throwing it away and getting rid of them, give it to us. We have a great idea. And they developed a technology called embryonic stem cell research therapy, where the medical world, believe it or not, are now capable of taking a blastocyst in a laboratory that's never, ever been in a human being's body, open it up, take out the inner cell mass, and by manipulation of genetic engineering and manipulating the genes and the DNA of this specific tissue, of these 200 tissue types, they're able to create in a laboratory artificially human tissue, cardiac, nerve, you name it. They're able to replicate what happens naturally in the body. They're able to create this tissue in the body. And once they create this tissue in the body, they're able then to take this specific tissue and multiply it and insert it into, for instance, a person has cardiac problems, part of his heart is deteriorating, there's tissue that's diseased, they can give him fresh cardiac material that was created in a laboratory and basically put it into their heart. That will basically cure the heart from its sickness. There won't be a need of a heart transplant later on. And you can do this with many other tissue diseases. It literally has the ability to cure every disease on the face of this earth if the technology will be developed to its ultimate. When you introduce 3D printing, they're even starting to make organs using 3D printing, using these types of cells to basically replace organs that became defective in a human's body. The technology is incredible, has the ability literally to cure a major, major amount of disease in the world. But guess what? The Catholic Church has basically prohibited. Why? Because they claim when you take a blastocyst in a laboratory that's never been a human being and you open it up to harvest out in a cell mass to create these replacement cells, this is abortion. And you're killing a soul, killing a human being, and it's prohibited. And this is, I read that text before, the Church says this explicitly. When I was debating the Roman Catholic clergyman, I told him, but there's only one problem. I've shown you the source of the Easter prohibition by God, and in that source it says, what's the Easter prohibition? Killing a human being inside a human being. And what that means, according to religious law, that applies to Jew and non-Jew alike, that as long as the actual human being, the blastocyst, that's the potential human being, has not been placed back into the body yet, it's still in a laboratory, in a hospital that basically created it, there's no ensoulment yet, no neshama given to it, it doesn't have a din of a human being yet, only when it's inserted back into the uterus and cleaves to the actual uterus and starts to gestate, does the issue of abortion come into existence. And I told this Roman Catholic priest, if that's the case, prohibiting embryonic stem cell research and therapies as abortion is a misreading of God's Bible that applies to you, it applies to us. In a laboratory, this is not abortion. He heard what I had to say, and he says, Rabbi, I thank you for telling me this, but I said, but there's only one problem. You have billions of adherents to your religion who are denied the ability to access to this life-saving technology because of a misinterpretation of abortion. He says, the rabbi, I only have one problem. I can't change the law. I might be a great scholar. We got to get the Pope. So I said, told him, for the sake of mankind, get me a meeting with the Pope and let me describe this to the Pope. Maybe I can convince him. I still haven't gotten the invitation. I probably will never get the invitation. But what I want to point out to you, that the guidelines for abortion are very, very explicitly defined in biblical text. The oral law defines them even further, applying not only to the Jew, applying to the non-Jew. So we therefore realize abortion is very, very strictly defined in a specific type of context and is allowed under certain types of halachic levels. I will mention to you that there's a certain leniency in abortion that applies to non-Jews that doesn't apply to Jews. And that is the gestational period up to day 41, not including day 41, the actual formation of the baby during those 40 days is now looked upon in the Gayisho halacha world, in the Ben Noach world, in the halacha concerning them, as any type of human being, even though it's inside a human being. From day 41, when you have already some of the organs of the human being's body system, specifically the heart and the circulatory system, already coming into some functionality, It's from day 41 on, when the baby's gestating the body, that the ease of abortion kicks in for the non-Jewish world. But from the time of conception up until day 41, even the B'nai Noach could in fact practice some form of abortion, what we call a morning after pill, which is used to basically abort babies that perhaps were conceived without desire. For a non-Jew would be permissible up to day 41, but not including day 41. In the world of halacha, we do not accept that because we have other rules and regulations based upon other psukim of the Torah and other sources that imply that the potential of humanhood later on prohibits us, based upon special gzeiros hakasev, for us to terminate any type of pregnancy from the moment of conception, even in the first 40 days. So for us in halacha, we have stricter guidelines. A morning after pill will not be permitted to us, as Rav Moshe Feinstein and other Gedol HaPoskim Paskin in their respective tshuvas. When it comes to abortion, I will tell you that a good majority of the Gedol HaPoskim treated aborting a baby inside as a din of murder, and therefore, as a result of that, which is the Shitas HaRambam and the Shita of many other Rishonim, Rav Moshe Feinstein accepted this, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik accepted this, Nodav Yehuda accepted this, and a good majority of our Peskim look upon it as a serious crime of murder. There are other Peskim who looked upon this, like Ashita Sarashi, that it's a question of ultimately damaging and destroying a mother's organ, Ubi Yerachimo, or destroying Hashchaz Zera. But I would say the way we treat it under normal conditions is we treat it as an act of murder. And therefore, that's how serious this concept of abortion is. And because of those specific shitas, Rav Moshe, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, and most of, I would say, the Litvisha Poskim who deal with this specific topic, for this reason, they therefore categorically rejected the concept of aborting a child when it comes to, unfortunately, a Tay-Sachs baby, even though the parents will suffer later on psychologically, mentally, emotionally, when a child is born who will look healthy, but in 4 or 5 years will die because of the Tay-Sachs syndrome. That's a major problem, but nevertheless, you can't kill a Tay-Sachs baby because you want to prevent it from being born. That's the shita of most Haposkim. There were some who were makel, I will admit to you, but that's based upon the fact they didn't want to look upon this as murder. They want to look upon this as wounding the mother's body, Hashchaz Zera. But Rav HaPoskim didn't pass in the way. They claim it's a form of murder. And for that reason, we don't allow Tay-Sachs abortions. So abortions, once again, just a chaz over very quickly. It's allowed when the mother's life is at stake, even a suffet b'klach nefesh. It's allowed if the mother, quite obviously speaking, later on, many Poskim said, if the woman was raped, et cetera, and she's psychologically, emotionally distraught, and she's ready to commit suicide because she can't, well, doesn't want to give birth to a child that was forced upon her because of rape. The many poskim who allow abortion over there because the mother's life is at stake, so because nefesh, psychologically, emotionally, and will allow basically an abortion to be done as well. I point out if a child has a major physiological deficiency in their body's creation, encephalic children, where there's a missing part of the brain, there's no way this child will survive. It could be fixed. When they come into this world, they're based on halacha labas allowed to be aborted by halacha while still in utero. So we have, quite obviously, definite kulos when it comes to abortion, but by and large, abortion on demand, which is basically what the courts ultimately mandated up until, you know, the termination of the Roe versus Wade decision, that up until, as long as that decision was in existence, you can have an abortion on demand for any reason you want. And statistically, the statistics show most of the abortions were done not because of the mother's health, not because of her mental fitness, not because of the baby's physical impediments of physical deficiencies in their physical existence and the way they're being created internally. It's done because of the convenience. I forgot to use contraception. I made a mistake, or it didn't work, or perhaps, quite obviously, something else happened, and therefore I decided financially it's not worth my while to have a child. And therefore, the case of Roe versus Wade, the woman who was Roe, who's a pseudonym for this woman, claimed that she was raped and that's why she wanted to have an abortion. Later on, she admitted that it had nothing to do with rape. She just didn't want the child, but her lawyer said, let's say it's rape, to give it a little more meaning and emotion, to get the judges more concerned, etc., etc. So therefore, but it was a charade. As I pointed out, later on, this woman, her daughter, was ultimately born, the third daughter that she wanted to basically undergo an abortion. She was adopted by another couple, and she's alive, chai v'kayam, etc., etc. She's not too happy with her mother. Her mother wanted to get rid of her before she even came into this world. And even this woman who was called Ro as a pseudonym, later on joined the anti-abortion movement, realizing she made a mistake, etc., etc. Many of the judges involved in that decision later on admitted they're really not pro-abortion, but they're looking upon it from a liberal legal perspective, etc., etc. There's been tremendous tumult amongst the court specialists and experts in secular law to this very day. Was Roe versus Wade a proper decision, not a proper decision? Anti-abortion critics of the secular, non-Jewish world have been fighting this for years. And ultimately speaking, this past Friday, the court, basically two-thirds of the court, ultimately paskined, as far as they're concerned, that Roe versus Wade leniency is no longer in existence. The concept of defining abortion is once again returned to the state rules and regulations. And if they have anti-abortion laws, they're the ones who are going to make the decisions. We're not making this type of decision anymore. And hopefully people will be more careful now, based upon education and otherwise, to understand that it's one thing if the mother's life is at stake. It's another thing, once again, if the baby, quite obviously, has major physical defects and won't be able to survive in this world. But if the purpose is convenience, and the purpose is quite obviously a lack of money, there are a lot of couples who can't have children who would love to adopt a child. And that is why we have to reconsider the whole concept of what we tell people who could obviously don't want to keep the baby for themselves, that there's another viable option. In a society like our society, which has such unlimited resources of money and such a desire to want to do acts of gemilas chesed and kindness, why not save millions and millions of children from an abortion? If the parents don't have money, so give them more money from the government to be able to help have this baby born and support this baby. There are plenty ways of giving these, instead of giving money to these abortion clinics who specialize in Planned Parenthood, who specialize in aborting, those millions and billions of dollars could be given as ways of welfare to parents who can't afford an extra child to keep the child alive and keep this neshama going. But unfortunately, it's become an ideological machlokas, and it is being used now by the Democratic Party that has become as left can be. This has nothing in their mind to do with God, has nothing to do with the Bible. It's women's rights. My body belongs to me, and I can do what I want with my body. Patient autonomy is the basic battle cry. But I want everybody listening to me to hear and tell you what halacha says. Chazal tell us, the body doesn't belong to me. Even the soul doesn't belong to me. God granted me a soul and a body to use during my lifetime to do wonderful constructive things with it. But at the end of the day, the Torah says on our soul and body, Nishmartim olam nafshasechem, we're supposed to protect our body and our soul from harm, all types of physical and spiritual and ethical moral harm. That's our mandate. And when we die, the body and soul are given back to God. That's the reality. That applies to a Jew, it applies to a non-Jew. There's no such thing as patient autonomy. My body is mine, I can do what I want with it. If I want to commit suicide, I should be allowed. In Jewish law, and even in Gaiish law, that should be halakhically prohibited based upon theological, biblical, and Talmudic sources that we have in our literature. So therefore, I want to point out to you the seriousness of this specific situation. The fact of the matter is that many more people now who have been educated and have been sensitized to the terrible, terrible avla of having unlimited abortions taking place. That's why in front of the Supreme Court, if you saw what was going on, as major as the crowd was, who were basically pro-abortion, that were crying and wailing, it's been taken away from us. That's not true. It was never taken away from them. What was taken away from him is the ability to have abortion on demand for every reason, as crazy and as insignificant as it might be. But the abortion law that's still in place that you're allowed to implement if the mother's life is at stake, if the baby's malformed and it's not going to come out as a healthy child, that is going to be adhered to in the states of the United States. They're still going to have that leniency. That leniency existed even before the Roe versus Wade. But unfortunately, they're not telling that to women. They're telling women, because of what happened this past Friday, no abortions will be allowed, which is a sheker v'chazav, a terrible, terrible lie, which is basically making millions of Americans be scared that if, in fact, their health is threatened as a mother giving birth, or the baby's totally defective, will not be functional, they will no longer have abortions for that. That is a misconstrual of the reality of what's left once they struck down Roe versus Wade. And that is the reality. And I want my Jewish brothers and sisters to understand that we have to be very careful over here to understand and teach other Jews who don't have the shear that I'm telling you today, don't have the background, that basically they have to understand that are coming into this world, creation of God, He gave us rules and regulations how we're supposed to conduct our life. And therefore, if that's the case, He defined for us what life means, what pekuach nefesh means, what saving life means, how far we have to go in saving life. It violates all the mitzvahs of the Torah except for three. Chilul Shabbos, Sovet pekuach nefesh. I'm a posek for Hatzolah of this neighborhood and of West Hempstead. We use pekuach nefesh, saving life, in incredible ways to do what we have to do to Mechallel Shabbos and Yom Tov for the purpose of saving human life. That's our Bechat HaBechai. We have the Chai Ben V'lo Shia Musbehem. Unfortunately, many other religions don't have those leniencies. We have those leniencies because God wanted us to have these leniencies. The Torah, Rambam says, is a Torah of rachamim, of compassion, of love, of concern for human health and welfare. Da'acher, da'achanam, v'chodes, da'ashalam. The ways of the Torah are ways of pleasantness and kindness and love. And therefore, when Hashem wants us to use medical technology, sometimes to terminate life, to save life, halach lamasa, God showing His love and compassion. But God has to make the decisions. He created life. He defined for us when life has to be maintained and when life has to be terminated. It's not up to us, because we think we're citizens of the world and we have a secular law, to defy the biblical text. I want to tell you something, that the fact that the left took this on as a major, major cause to fight, at the Supreme Court, there were the same mobs of anti-abortionists there, young, vibrant children of all different races, coming and crying and saying, thank God God has now given us an ability to once again sensitize America, that you just can't indiscriminately destroy fetal life because you don't want to have a baby. Thank God we now have a Supreme Court that's sensitive to biblical concepts of God. America was founded upon biblical theology, and we have a court now that believes in biblical theology as part and parcel of defining the parameters when you're allowed to do something, when you're not allowed to do something. You can't write in your money, in God we trust, and then when it comes to conducting your life in this world, forget about God and do whatever you want because that's our will and whim, and therefore secular law overrules everything. There are some leftists, I will tell you, especially those who believe, and this is part of their theology, that there's no such thing as a man and woman anymore. You can define exactly who you want to be when you get up in the morning. In mid-afternoon, you can change your mind. By night, you can change your mind afterwards. The fact that leftists in the government today have said we have to cut the book of Genesis out of the Bible because that God who wrote that book is biased against ethical and moral behavior. He says only marriage between men and women, and he doesn't give marriage any type of credibility when it comes to same-sex marriages. For them to think that they can tell God what to do and cut out pieces of the Bible, they're the same ones who are advocating to continue Roe and Wade, same personalities. God plays no existence when it comes to defining rules and regulations of society. If God can't tell us whether we're a man and woman on our regulations, God can't tell us whether we should save life or destroy life, whether abortion is permissible or not permissible. This is the theology, or I would call the concept of atheism, we are confronting in our society today. I want to tell you there's a certain irony. I saw the rules and regulations of a German court in the 1970s that talked about the problem of abortion, and I compared it to the United States Supreme Court. I want you to know something. as bad and as terrible were the abominations done by the Germans during the Holocaust, and I don't have to exaggerate how bad it was, that German court in the 1970s, their Supreme Court, ended up basically banning abortion unless the mother's life is at stake and other similar circumstances. They did not, under any condition, give a blanket or a little allowance to kill human life. The mother's life has to be consideration. The baby's rights to life have to be given consideration. This is the German court at the same time in 1970 that Roe versus Wade came into existence. This German court, ironically, had changed the German position about dealing with human beings from the 1940s and are now literally going according to biblical mandate the way God wanted it to be paskened in the Torah for Jew and non-Jew alike. There's a world of irony we're living in over here. And we have to sensitize ourselves, our children, our grandchildren, sensitize society. That we have to realize that people who are created in this world were created with an image of God. That image of God's in us our whole life from the time we're born to the time we die. That's called our neshama. That's called our tzelem Elokim. It gives us a piece of God in each and every one of us. That is something that has to be preserved, cherished, kept in a place of physical and spiritual protection. Nishmartem ol nafsho seichem, the pasuk says. We have to treat people with dignity, treat their bodies with dignity, treat babies internally who are being created with dignity, and realize that we don't make the rules and regulations when it comes to human existence. The God who created the universe, the whole universe, and created our earth, and then created the world we live in, and human beings in society, going back to Adam v'Chava, the rules and regulations of the Issa of abortion were given to Adam and Chava as Zayin Mitzvos, at applications Zayin Mitzvos, way before Klal Yisrael received the Torah at Har Sinai. So what I'm pointing out to you, this is God's divine will I'm articulating now. It's not my personal opinion. It's the opinion of the Rabbeinu Shalom. If you're a doctor, a nurse, and you're involved in a medical situation, there's a rule and regulation on the books I want all the doctors and nurses to know. And the Roman Catholic nurses and doctors know this leniency. So do the Muslims. And we as Jews have to be as well adamant about it. The hospitals cannot make any medical professional violate their religious principles to do something that is not warranted according to their religion. For any hospital to force the doctors to participate in an illegal illicit abortion, the Christians are excluded, the Muslims are excluded. But guess what? The Jews are likewise excluded, but you have to open your mouth and say to them, this violates my religious beliefs and they cannot touch you. That's the way it's written in hospital statutes. And that is a rule and regulation that could be brought to court and adjudicated accordingly. I want you to know about this. I want you to be aware of this. We are not, especially now with Roe versus Wade, it will perhaps be easier for us to apply that specific principle. But we have to realize it's a schus, it's a matana from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a miracle how babies are created in this world. It's a blessing from God. God's one of the three partners of the creation of the baby. The mother and father create the physical body with their genetics, the sperm, the genes, the chromosomes. God gives the neshama, gives the tzelem Elokim, gives the spiritual and divine intellectual essence of the child. It all works together. And when that child's born, it's a bracha coming into this world. It's a future world being created by this child, because this child will grow up and have their children. And his children, our children, will have their children. You're guaranteeing humanity's existence for worlds to come, for years to come. And therefore, be very careful. Don't be fooled by the secular press, secular literature. Abortion laws existed and were in existence way before Roe and Wade ever came into existence. And even before then, there were tremendous permissibilities allowed for abortion, for mother's health, and for baby's problems and other stuff that were promulgated by the states of the United States. Roe and Wade opened up the Pandora's box for 50 years. And miraculously, we now have a Supreme Court that considers morals and ethics mentioned by God in the Bible as significant when it comes to defining what we're allowed to do, besides what's written in secular law books that don't filter God into the picture. I hope this gave you a little more understanding of the seriousness of the situation. We can't allow the Supreme Court over here to have its members threatened when it comes to their life. Kavanaugh's life was threatened. This one's life was threatened. Already the secular leftists are going around breaking cities again, destroying businesses. They're protesting. The fact of the matter is, our group who believes in God, believes in the Bible, believes in rules and regulations of ethics and morals, and a society bound by rules, we're not going around breaking buildings and destroying this or destroying that. That's not our legacy. That's not what we believe in. We believe in Dina Mechusadina, what the law of the land is, so it has to be adhered to, if quite obviously doesn't contrast with our Torah laws. But nevertheless, we have to be a good citizen. We have to conduct ourselves with dignity and kavod, but realize that this is a miracle from God that our Supreme Court was able to do this. And we have to hope and pray that Hashem will have, as we come closer to the end of Mashiach, the world will be filled with the knowledge of God, that people will once again be resensitized to the fact that you can't make rules and regulations for how human beings exist in this world. That's God's privilege. He created us. He gave us rules and regulations how to live our life. He told us what's permissible and what's impermissible. That is the rules and regulations we have to adhere to. Not something that people dream up because of their dreaming new types of concepts and woke types of concepts, creating things that never existed before. I hope I made my point today. Let's hope and pray that the world will have a greater hisgalus of the divine essence of God. God's rules and regulations applied to Jew and non-Jew will become more known to the public at large. And we'll be zach one day not to have to be subject to these types of crazy debates that should not even be a debate. The world shall live by the law of God, Jews by Tayyag Mitzvahs, going by B'nai Noach Halachos, and be able to live together in harmony and love and compassion and fulfill God's divine will of how he wanted the world to conduct itself according to divine mandates, as we see explained by the Torah in very explicit terminology.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.